Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. I'm very excited to be here tonight. You've just been listening to Angie with the Discovery Channel, and now I hope you're ready for some exciting Zen awareness practice. Zen teacher Sherry Huber is in Costa Rica this week, and she will be back next week. Sherry Huber has been a Zen student and teacher for more than 25 years. She's the author of more than 15 books, and she has a new book coming out this spring called When You're Falling, Dive. You can learn more about Sherry by going to her website, which is www.sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. We have a special treat for you this week while Sherry's out of town. I'm going to be playing for you a discussion with the monks and neighbors of the Zen Monastery Practice Center, 320 acres of beautiful woods and wildlife in Murphy's, California, which is about three areas east of the Bay Area. It's a little bit north of Yosemite, if you know where Yosemite is. It's also close to Bear Valley Ski Area, if you're out there. Before I start that recording, I want to give you some contact information in case you'd like to get in touch with us. You can reach us by phone at 650-723-9010. You can also reach us by email at openair@kzsu.org. Also, we'll be offering a special email-only show in the future where Sherry will be responding to your email questions. So if you have a question about your life, about awareness practice, Sherry would love to address that. You can send us your email questions to openair@kzsu.org. And I'll start for you now our discussion with the monks and neighbors at the Zen Monastery Practice Center. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're here tonight at the Zen Monastery Practice Center in Murphy's, California, with the monks and neighbors of the Zen Monastery Practice Center. And we're here tonight to talk about spiritual practice. And so I'd like to open up our discussion tonight to anyone who'd like to share about what their spiritual practice is, what brought them here, what the benefits are, and so on. And if you hear some noise in the background, it'll be the frogs and other wildlife at the Zen Monastery Practice Center.
We are out in the middle of 320 acres, mm-hmm. and so it's quite rural and heavily populated by all sorts of woods folks.
All sorts of wood folks.
Yes.
Good. So who'd like to start our discussion tonight?
Spiritual practice, it's I've been looking at that a lot lately, and it's about being happy.
It's about being happy.
It's about being happy.
Yeah. Can you say more about that?
it's about opening up into possibilities. And being happy and letting go of wanting to stay stuck, which I can often do.
First time listener. You said a long time ago, or not a long time ago, that the ways to get to spiritual practice are either through intelligence or pain. And I would like to think I got here through intelligence, but realistically it was because I was struggling and things weren't really working with what I was doing in my life. The reason I came to a spiritual practice is to see whether there was an alternative to what I was doing. And I was doing the same thing over and over and over again. Living at the monastery is, and doing a spiritual practice is not an easy thing a lot of the time. It's really tough a lot of the time. And I'm kind of in one of those places right now. But at the monastery, it's a tremendously supportive place to be when you are in a tough place or you are struggling. So
would it be fair to say that the struggle that you experience in the monastery is not that different from the struggle you experienced in life?
I would say it's exactly the same.
Yeah, you run into the same hard places.
Yeah.
It's just here you're focused on seeing if there's an alternative to that struggle.
Right. Uh-huh. And through the practice, I see alternatives. And before the practice, I just thought that was my life. And that was what I was destined to live again and again. And here, there's coaching available. And through the practice, there's a lot of tools available to do something different. Mm-hmm. And it's very helpful.
I guess the closest I can come to saying what brought me to spiritual practice is an intuitive sense that something else was possible. That, I had no idea what that was, literally. It was just a sense of being called. That was my experience of coming to spend time at the monastery and ultimately move to the monastery, was just an increasing, just being called. I was just looking at it today, going through what I would call a difficult day, and things are happening and I don't like it and I don't want it to be this way or whatever it may be. And as I'm paying attention and noticing, having just these moments of just total well-being, just total joy and well-being, and those moments are not based on anything. There's no reason for it. And that's one of the most exquisite experiences to have. To have that sense of well-being and realize that it's not because of anything that's going on in my life. It's that I've taken a breath and just relaxed into, kind of. It feels like as I kind of begin to grow into my spiritual skin, it feels like I become comfortable in my own shoes, it's like I'm learning what brought me here. Mm-hmm. I'm finding out what it was that brought me here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I came to the monastery because there wasn't anything else that made sense at the time that I came. And after having looked at lots of different practices, many of them in Buddhism, and finding this particular brand, it just made sense. I tried sort of the normal getting into a career, having friendships, having relationship, and I always wound up in a place of this just isn't quite doing it. And that whole idea of the possibility and of knowing that something far greater exists and having tastes of it in Buddhism and then specifically in this practice. And being here at the monastery, that it feels like that's the faith building, because that keeps happening. And I'll wind up in a place of struggle, and then there'll be that magical opening that doesn't seem to have anything to do with practice, but feels like it must have a great deal to do with practice, because it happens here a lot. Mm-hmm. And the frogs help. And it's never ever felt like it was a decision I wanted to go back on. Mm-hmm.
I came to spiritual practice at a point in my life when my life stopped working. I had developed a really sort of offbeat survival way of surviving in the world, and it worked for a while, and it carried me through a number of years, and then finally it stopped working. And I didn't know that there was something to do. And when it was made available, it felt like it changed everything. And I was remembering this morning, actually, sitting at a guidance appointment with you at a retreat in North Carolina, and it was everything. There was this little voice inside that says, I think we should go. I think we should go there. This is really neat. This is different than anything I've ever experienced before. You know, it works. Nothing, you know, I didn't know before that there was anything that actually worked. And but everything else in me was saying, no, this is a bad idea. This is a bad plan. And I remember saying to you, well, I mean, what do you think would happen if I went? And you said, well, I think you would see how you cause yourself to suffer. And you were right. And I have been suffering ever since. But, you know, it's been great. To me, the difference is, it's the difference between being completely out of, control is not the right word, but it's like something else had my life. And it was my suffering had my life. You know, my attention was always on what was wrong, how unhappy I was, what else I wanted instead. And the difference has been between that and the choices in my life more and more being able to come from my heart. And so the life experience I have, you know, often I still find myself in the suffering places, but the choice is more and more to receive love, to receive companionship from myself, compassion from myself, and really everything else that I ever wanted that I didn't even know to want it because I didn't know it was there. And those things have become available. And it's like the more I give to the practice, the more it gives to me. And it just goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm.
And I have a sense when you say the practice that it would be easy to substitute the word life.
Yes.
But the more you give to life, the more life gives to you.
Yeah. And one of my favorite ways of thinking about what we do here is that the monastery structure is like a small, I'm not sure what the right word is, the macrocosm or small model of life. And we're learning how within the context here, it's smaller and it's easier to see how it works because it's smaller. Mm-hmm. But we're learning the same process of life that will help us in the biggest, like the life with the biggest L that you can think of. Mm-hmm. And as we learn here, with all the support that we have, how to be with ourselves in compassion in every moment, then whatever life gives, it feels like we can bring the same willingness and the same understanding to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never would have thought in a million years that I would have ended up here and here for this long. One thing that came up when I was looking at this just now is that when I was in college, I signed up for mysticism class and found out midway through that at the end of the class, the exam was that you had to spend 10 hours in silence, in solitude, and I tried to get out of the class because I thought that sounded like a nightmare. And I couldn't imagine why someone would make someone do that. This was in college.
10 hours.
10 hours. No talking.
For 10 hours.
10 hours. So just for the record, I've been here several years. And just for the record, it is a silent monastery. So it's just amazing. I really thought I was going to come here just so I could kind of get my life together, get things how I wanted them, be the person I should be, and then go out and get my next job. And after 6 months, I flipped the coin as to whether I should stay longer. And then over time, it's felt less like something that I have to lean on, kind of a superstitious trick like that. In terms of the thing that keeps coming up is that I'm so clear that it's what my heart wants. That everything in my system, everything I've been taught to believe about myself says, this is not who I am, this is not the way I'm supposed to be in the world. But when I look underneath all that stuff, it feels like what I always find out is that what my heart wants is freedom. And that what monastic training offers is freedom. As difficult as it can be, as many turns as there are in it, in the road, it's definitely what it offers and truly provides. Mm-hmm. There's no one that I live with that I don't see that in. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me because I would bet that a lot of people thinking about monastic practice thinking about living in a monastery, the word that doesn't spring immediately to mind is freedom.
In fact,
it's confined and controlled and regimented and all of those. It's so structured and scheduled. How could there be any freedom in that? You never get to do what you want. You don't get to talk. You don't make any decisions. I mean, how could that be freedom?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I can really go there in terms of how it could look like that from the outside. And all I can say is I'm a testament to how not free my life was before I began training. Mm-hmm. Because what was running my life was ideas about who I needed to be. I was so controlled, and I say it as if it's total past tense, which is a joke, which is not true at all. But it's fun to talk about it like that. But, you know, it was definitely more extreme before I started training in terms of I didn't even know that's what was going on. I just, you know, that's what, you know, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely not free in terms of what was controlling the way I perceived reality.
So how ironic that you would feel more freedom in this kind of environment than you would feel out there in the world where supposedly we have great freedom.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, I came to the monastery very wet behind the ears. I basically just read some of the books and listened to the tapes and claimed that I knew exactly what I was in for and drove cross country to get here. The point that I think that it became clear that I was coming to the monastery was where I looked at my life and saw that technically I was getting everything that I thought I ever wanted, and I was really not happy with any of it. Mm. So dissatisfaction is what brought me here, thinking that, well, it's obvious that all the things aligned together didn't add up to happiness. There's got to be something. And then when I read one of the books, it was just really clear that it was speaking to me in the sense that there is something inside that is always at peace, experiences freedom, is happy all the time, no matter what. Happy, it's more like a feeling of just freedom, I think is a good word for it. Mm-hmm.
And that that's there all the time.
Yeah, it's available all the
even
time.
Even though other stuff might be going on.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That there's a choice, that the attention doesn't have to go into a direction where I'm perceiving life in a particular way. You know, it's kind of like it opens the doors to lots of different possibilities, things that I can experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really grateful for the whole experience too. It was very helpful not to know as much as I thought. and the transformative work of being given the gift of there's nothing wrong with you, the retreat here, just gave me all the stuff that I needed to know how to look at my life in a new way. Mm-hmm. And it was an extremely transformative experience, and it continues to be so.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're here in Murphy's, California, talking with the monks and neighbors at the Zen Monastery Practice Center.
Next up, we have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend at 6 p.m. 9 p.m., we'll have Wednesday Night Live with Tom Armstrong, followed by Fine-Tuning Utopia with Kathleen at 10 p.m. So stay tuned here to KZSU at 90.1 FM. So we're going to be getting back to our discussion in just a moment. My name is Michael Gray. I'm the host of Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach us at 650-723-9010, or you can email us at openair@kzsu.org. We would love to hear from you. So right now we're going to go back to our discussion with the monks and neighbors of the Zen Monastery Practice Center about spiritual practice. If you hear some funky noises in the background, you can know that the frogs in the pond there are piping up and wanting to join the conversation.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're here in Murphy's, California, and we're at the Zen Monastery Practice Center with the monks and neighbors here. And in our discussions earlier, we heard terms like coaching and support and guidance. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about what the monastery structure means for you, both for the monks here and for the neighbors as well. And also, I heard a lot about happiness and learning to live from your heart. I heard the word freedom a lot, and I'm curious to hear more about those ideas as well.
Well, one of the things I was looking at as people were talking in terms of freedom and living from the heart is the opportunity that the monastery provides in being able to see that, well, what was pointed out earlier, that I caused myself to suffer. That I actually, this afternoon, I had an experience where I got to a place and I went, oh, this is very, very familiar. And, you know, if I were out in the world, it would be really easy to believe it was about the content, you know, and I just need to change this and move that and, you know, as we talk about, you know, get a new relationship, get a new job, get a new whatever, new house, new car. And there's something very helpful about realizing that it's within me and that the places I go are very familiar, very habitual. Not very known. You know, it's almost like an experience of seeing myself out of the corner of my eye and going, oh, there's a lot to see there. So to me, it's back to what we were talking about earlier about freedom, that if I can see, oh, this, I've been here before, this place is familiar, how did I get here? That it's within me. It's something that's going on here inside of me. I got to a place of real excitement with it because I saw something new that I hadn't seen before, and it opens up, as people were mentioning before, a lot of possibility. And for me, that's a place of living from the heart because I'm being willing to stay with myself, I'm being willing to look to see what's going on with me, and I'm willing to try new things.
And that really is one of the big advantages of living in a situation like this. As you mentioned, there's nobody else to blame, right? Well, there is, but it's such a waste of time. So I keep walking along and tripping over the same thing. I keep falling in the same hole over and over and over. If I'm out in the world and I'm at a job and I'm with people and in different kinds of relationships, it's easy to say it's because of that, it's because of them. But if I'm the constant, and there's no denying that, because there isn't anybody else that I'm actually interacting with in this kind of environment, then it speeds things right up, doesn't it? It helps us along to that realization that I am causing this, I can let go of this. Yeah, it's very good. Thank you.
I'm a full-time student and a full-time dad and a full-time husband and a full-time employee. I don't live at the monastery. And the notion of freedom is very appealing. So I come to the monastery regularly to get that message of freedom that I don't have to live my life like I used to always live it. Guidance is particularly important because I'll get a lot of good ideas about how to get going down the track. And I check in with groups like this and listen to whoever happens to be sitting on the pillow giving guidance. And I move to that spot of hearing that there is an alternate, that there's something else to listen to. Mm-hmm. I may be on the right track, but it's always good to check it out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such an important perspective because you're, as we say, in the trenches, and with at least four full-time jobs that you mentioned, it's easy to get caught up in the busyness of life and forget that an alternative is possible. That it's not just nose to the grindstone and one foot in front of the other in that trench. That you can lift your head up and take a breath of air and come back to yourself and check in and see, am I living the life that I want to be living, not in terms of the content, because it sounds like you're pretty committed to that, but how you're doing that, how you're being a husband, how you're being a father, how you're being a student and a working person.
And the practice infiltrates all of those, and I actually do find doses of freedom when I show up at work a little bit early before I turn on the computer, or right when I turn on the computer, do what some of this practice suggests. Just pause, breathe, wait. Mm-hmm. Don't get just jumping on the scramble all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. When I get home from work, I have a laundry list of things I think have to happen. Shelve those for a second and just wait. Mm-hmm. And let something else arise. Uh-huh. I don't do that all the time. But it's part of the practice. I practice doing that. Mm-hmm. And there is freedom when I do those things.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I was just thinking, what a gift for your family to bring that kind of conscious awareness to the moment before you come into the house and interact with them. And I was thinking about the letting go bowls that we have. There's a little bowl that a potter, who's part of our sangha, makes, and there's a little story that goes with it about the fellow who was coming in from a very hard day at work, and he paused, and he touched the tree outside the front door, and the person who was with him asked him what he was doing, and he said that he liked to always leave his troubles there at that tree, so that he didn't take them in and inflict them on his family. And then he could go out the next day, and if he wanted to pick those troubles up, he could do it and take them back out into the world. So we created these little bowls that represent that, so that people can stop in that way at the end of the workday or whatever, and just leave their troubles off there. See what's there in the morning. If there's anything you want to take back into the day, you can lift it out of the bowl and take it back again. And what a kindness for our loved ones that we just take that few minutes to make that transition.
And mostly I find my troubles are how I handle my troubles.
Yeah. And that bringing that kind of conscious awareness changes everything, doesn't it?
I have to give a plug for my lovely partner who's at home, actually with child, a brand new one on the way very soon. She's very involved in this practice, and she would be one of the people that would tell you that I don't do any of that perfectly. And that the nice thing about being in partnership with someone who's doing this practice is that they can move to the spot that lets all that stuff go.
Yeah.
And lets things be as they are.
Yeah.
And doesn't mix them up and
yeah.
and create problems.
Yeah. So you have a little mini monastery.
Yes.
In your home, because that's what the monks, of course, do for one another, is to create that safe place, that support. You know, if in a certain moment I kind of lost my direction and have forgotten who I am and that sort of thing for a moment, then somebody else is going to remember, and they're going to be the conscious, compassionate presence that enables us to get through possibly a sticky moment and move on. So to have a partner at home doing the same thing is quite wonderful. Thank you.
I moved up here near the monastery to be close, as close as I could get to the source of guidance that I found so useful in my life in the previous 2 years of having gone to the Zen monastery, well, the Zen practice center in Mountain View, which going there on a regular basis gave me the opportunity to see for myself not only how I caused myself to suffer, but how I had carried this around with me, like in a, not just a letting go bowl, but in a letting go 50-gallon drum. That I just continue.
Or a holding on to 50-gallon
yes,
drum.
50-gallon drum.
Kind of strap it to your back.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And as I was able to respond to the guidance and practice in my life, I saw what in many places would be called miracles happen in my life. Relationships with, for instance, my mother of 88 years changed overnight. It's amazing how much wiser our parents get as they get older and we get freer. And so coming here intensified the opportunity I had that I was experiencing in Mountain View. And I was able to simplify my life, not as much as the monks have simplified theirs, but enough to be able to see more about my life and how I have experienced, how I have caused myself to suffer. And now I have a greater understanding, a greater, tremendously greater sense of well-being, and I'm a pretty happy camper. It, to use a technical term.
Yeah, yes.
Yes,
a Zen term.
Zen term.
Zen term. Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you.
As I am listening, the words that are coming up for me are the wisdom of no escape. So when I was out in the world in suffering, there were a million different ways that I could leave myself, that I would abandon myself every day. And here what happens is I'm encouraged and supported from all sides, it feels like, for staying with my experience, staying with myself through things that are really hard, so that I can cultivate that choice of freedom. So there I am in a place of suffering, like people are talking about, and out in the world, it's much easier for me to just fall into it, and here what I can do instead is right at what feels like a pivotal moment, a really important moment to stay with yourself, choose to be with willingness instead of the belief that I'm inadequate, I'm stuck, choosing habit, choosing limit. That feels like a huge, huge thing that's offered here.
Well, now let me ask you this. So there you are at one of those places where we often cave in or buckle or whatever it is, we kind of give up on ourselves and slide into fear or inadequacy or suffering or habits that are not helpful to us. And does it take an extraordinary person to do the kind of thing that you folks are talking about? I mean, don't you have to sort of be already a superhuman, superman, superwoman in order to do this kind of thing?
That's a great question, because when I first came here and witnessed all the monks, and I, what arose for me was, oh my gosh, you know, I would never be able to do this. These are clearly superheroes. Uh-huh. I'm surrounded by them. I need to fix myself and do this and that before I can attempt to be a monk.
Uh-huh.
But really, that's exactly the kind of thing that I needed to see, that kind of belief system in myself. It just takes heart. It just takes heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't take anything more.
Yeah. So all of those kind of images that we get of there's the big tall mountain and there's the person who's going to climb to the top, it's not that you have to be superhuman to do it. You just have to be willing to keep putting one foot in front of the other and have whatever experience you're having with each one of those steps.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, you can make it to the top. If you just don't quit, you can make it to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And the good part about that for me is that as we go along, we gain strength.
Mm.
So at the very beginning, I might fail. And especially if you look up, don't look up, don't look down. Just look right where you are, and as you go along, it's true often that it gets harder. It's true. We deal with more and more difficult aspects of ourselves and deeper problems and those kinds of things. But our muscles are better. We're stronger. We have experience behind us. We've been through a lot of things. The image that the Buddha used of the long silk scarf, and there's a knot tied in it, and then another knot, and another knot, and another knot, and another knot, until finally one more knot can't be tied in that scarf. And that's when most of us decided to do the alternative to continuing to try to get one more knot of suffering in that scarf, if I haven't mixed too many images there. So we decide that we're going to start undoing this suffering, taking these knots apart, and the first one is not that difficult because it was pretty recently tied. And the one beneath that is a little, but those ones that are way down in there, they're tied. But we're so good at untying knots at that point that we actually can just kind of move right on through it pretty quickly.
And not only that, but the process of letting the knots become untied is so enjoyable. After a point, you're not doing it, you're doing it just for the joy. But in this moment, I'm called to untie this knot to the best of my ability right now to attend to this.
Yeah.
And that's joyful.
Yes, instead of this knot proves that there's something wrong with me, mm-hmm. and I wish there weren't, and I wish I didn't have to look at this, wish I didn't have to face it. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's there, it's yours, it's something you can do, and you're willing to do it. Mm-hmm. That's a happy life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to express gratitude because, you know, as I'm listening to people speak, I'm just recalling before I came to the monastery, there was definitely both the experience of intense suffering and just that knowing that people are talking about, that sort of being called, that experience of starting to sit, of just this alternative that is so much greater and wanting it so much and not yet knowing, just not having the coach for how to choose that.
Mm-hmm. And just a sense that there must be another way. Mm-hmm. There must be an alternative mm-hmm. to this mm-hmm. kind of suffering or dissatisfaction.
Right.
What that brings up for me is something that I read in one of your books, Sherry, before I moved up here from the Bay Area. It was that if we're looking for water, you don't just drill a few feet in one place and then move to another place and drill a few feet and then another and another. And that could in some way describe the approach I had over many years to a spiritual practice would be to try something and go a little ways, but then something else would come up. And so it really was a point for me to make a shift and say that I was willing to go to where a teacher was available, the teacher that was speaking to me at that point, and then to be willing to drill deep and to just keep looking and keep looking. And I found that I needed to physically be located close to the monastery in order to do that. But the idea of continuing to look is something that just, as I'm now looking and have been here almost a year, the looking just gets deeper and more, and there are more and more things to look at. And so I can see that it never would end, the untying the knots, the looking, you know.
Yes.
Because you find more and more to look at.
Yes. And people can see that as overwhelming or depressing unless we get to that place of realizing that this is joyful work.
You begin to get some water.
Yes, you begin to get some water. Right. Even if it's a little murky in the beginning.
That's right.
Right? There's evidence of water here.
That's right. Yeah. And the thought that really clear, sweet water must just be, you know, further down.
Yeah. And if we want to stay with that kind of thought, that there are a lot of thirsty people. Mm-hmm. And so if you find a good source of clear, clean, sweet water, and it's really flowing, then it can quench the thirst of many, many people. And that's certainly my experience of practice, that the more we open ourselves up to kindness and compassion and a willingness to live our lives from that, the more in us that needs to receive that kindness and compassion arises, and the more that around us is drawn to that source of kindness and compassion. So one of the images that we often use is the Buddha talked about people as children in a burning building, children playing in a burning building. not knowing the extent of the suffering, not really realizing how bad it's going to get before it's over, and just kind of mindlessly going along, not attending to the enormity of the situation, the human condition. And that what's possible for us as we're practicing, when we realize that the building is on fire and that people are probably going to catch on to this. Now, for many people, that happens with a diagnosis of a disease or the loss of a loved one or maybe a job that they counted on, but some sort of tragedy strikes in a person's life and suddenly they realize the building is on fire and they want to find a way out. And what we can do, those of us who practice, is to find the exits and stand by the exit with the door open, saying, here's a way out if you would like to take it. There is an alternative to suffering. Compassion is available to us. It's possible to live our lives in freedom. And this is one way to do it. It's not the only way, but by George, it's one way. And so if you're looking for an exit, try this one. Yeah. Thank you.
Sherry, you talked about finding the exit from our suffering, and you used an analogy before of the scarf with the knots in it. And I was wondering if you could, for our listeners, unpack that analogy a little bit, and perhaps something tangible in terms of the way we suffer, for example, is one of the knots. Maybe I have a behavior or a habit, and sort of what it means to tie that knot and to untie that knot.
Yeah, well, for most of us, when we're growing up, we have to adapt, we have to adjust to life, and so something happens and it's painful and we suffer over it, and we can imagine that a knot is tied in that scarf, and then we just leave it, we go on, because most of us don't have any kind of help or support or tools for dealing with it, and then the next thing happens and we suffer over that. There's something painful, we're disappointed. Our feelings are hurt, we feel abandoned or misunderstood, or there's another knot. And we just keep going through life in that way with more. It's like a kind of a building a foundation of suffering. More and more is added to that as life goes on. And we see that everywhere. We see that so often with people who, as they get older, become sadder and more frightened and more defeated, and their lives become smaller and their world just shrinks. You know, we have an image of people get older, they get wiser, they're successful. You know, pretty soon they get to this point, you have enough money, you retire, life is really going in the direction. But how many of us really experience that in people's lives? It's a wonderful image for advertising, but how many of us know people who are actually living that kind of life? And so the suffering is just compounded. We finally, for many, many people, reach a point where life becomes kind of hopeless. And the dreams are probably not going to come true, and it's not actually going to work, and I'm probably not going to get what I want. And so I just begin to sort of settle and compromise and that sort of thing. Knots. To me, the lucky ones are the ones who get to that point of the last knot being tied, that last piece of suffering that happens, that last disappointment, and the person who, for whatever combination of reasons, has the thought, there might be another way. Maybe something else is possible. As folks have been saying, to have that realization, you know, that's the untying of the first knot. Just that realization, and then the letting go, the acceptance that this is the way life is, this is what's happened, what might I do, how might I approach this, can I be different, can I?
So we've heard a lot about suffering and how that goes on and how we learn to free ourselves from that suffering through this practice. Sometimes the distinction we make is between what we call process and content. So content might be the what we're suffering over, and the process, what we're often interested in And practice here is how we approach a particular what or content. And so a what might be, for example, a job, a relationship, a friendship, education, something that we want a particular outcome for. So I'm curious if other people have things they want to add about, for example, not what, but how. For example, how do we look at the process of our lives, the process of suffering, versus what the content is?
Well, I have actually a story of when that first occurred to me. In my, what I did for my living for many years was I ice skated and juggled. So it's called a variety act, and I traveled around the world and I did ice shows, which sounds really exciting. And it has certainly its exciting moments, but it's a job. And I would at times be really unhappy. And I always figured it was, you know, something real. So, you know, it was this show or this place where I was or this, you know, there was always something that seemed truly to be the cause of my current dissatisfaction, where if this were different, then I would be happy. And so I did it for many years, and by and large believing that if this were different, then I would be happy, because sometimes things were different, and I was in fact happy for short periods of time. And then I changed my life, and I stopped doing ice shows full time, and I started a business. And I was sitting in my office one day, and all of a sudden I realized I was so unhappy. I was miserable. And it hit me that I felt exactly the same way sitting in my office doing this completely different thing as I had felt doing an ice show. And I got it, that it had nothing to do with the ice show or the office or the anything, that it was me, that I was the common denominator in these two settings. And maybe I could make a difference with that as opposed to trying to make a difference with these externals. And, well, I have made a difference, but it's an ongoing, it's not like I make a difference and then I'm done making a difference. It's an ongoing making of a difference. But I think getting that really seeing that so black and white, that show makeup and all the things that go with the show and work, that I was the same, that was so key for me to get it, that for my experience of life to be different, I had to be different.
So we're kind of full circle, aren't we? Back to the how we cause ourselves to suffer. So in that awareness, you know now where to look. Mm-hmm. And that revealed for you where to look. I need to look at how I am living my life, how I am seeing what I see, how I hear what I hear, how I make the decisions that I make, how I believe what I believe, because the change is going to need to happen inside me, which is wonderful news, isn't it? Because if we need to change all of the externals in life, in order to be happy, if we need to get everyone, all the people we work with, all the people we're in relationship with, all the circumstances of life to be the way we want them to be for us to be happy, the odds are not good. But if it's us, if it's me, then that is something that I can have influence over. I can make a choice about the focus of my attention, and the awareness that I bring to my life, and definitely influence my well-being.
So we were talking about how this process works, how you go from, how I've gone from the world of, no matter what I'm doing, experiencing myself as what we call suffering. And it seems to me that the process is that we start seeing how we constantly have these voices in our heads telling us what's wrong, and believing them, or feeling unhappy, or, and just going along with my conditioned thoughts. And it feels like the process of the practice is beginning to hear those thoughts for what they are, as consistent, as not necessarily something that I'm generating, but something that I hear and I just follow along. And as we hear them for what they are, which is conditioned thoughts, not something that we've created, there becomes a choice. And what we practice in that space of the choice is attending to the breath. And the breath begins to expand. And in that expansion of the breath and in our being able to follow the breath and feel the breath, new possibilities open up. And that possibility is the joy of being present. And that joy of being present expands, and that makes the breath get bigger, and then the being present gets bigger, and it all just builds. And it builds in a wonderful way, as opposed to the opposite, which is where suffering can build, where one negative thought and one problem builds to another problem and another. The same process goes on with the breath and our attention to choosing that. So an example of that in my everyday life is that a lot of times as my day goes on, I can get agitated or whatever. Life happens. And I realize that I want to attend to the breath so that, because that attending to the breath brings that experience of peace and well-being.
And we've come to the end of our hour here. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. I'm the host of the show. Tonight, we've been here in Murphy's, California at the Zen Monastery Practice Center with the monks and neighbors of the Zen Monastery Practice Center. And as you can hear in the background, the frogs and the pond. And I'd like to thank all the monks and neighbors for joining us tonight and for contributing to this show. If you'd like to join us next week, Sherry will be back. You can call us at 650-723-9010. If you want to learn more about the Zen Monastery Practice Center, you can go to Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com or thezencenter.org. Good night.